Section 3, Main Streets and Mill Villages. As you read, look for how middle-class whites lived during this period, how mill village families lived and worked, innovations in transportation, technology, and entertainment, and the following term, suburb. After 1900, almost every white townsperson could use segregation to take advantage of blacks, but not all whites were treated equally in industrial society. Economic status tended to separate them from one another. In general, urban whites lived in one of two worlds in the Progressive period, the more privileged and comfortable towns, or the mill villages on the edge of the towns. While there were not the same formal restrictions on how whites lived together, interactions could be limited between those who lived in the center of town and those who lived beyond its edge. As one wealthier Durham resident put it, "We recognized that they were not quite our kind of people." The middle class and the spirit of progress. The early 20th century saw the emergence of North Carolina's version of the middle class. Main Street often was paved and had streetlights. Houses near the center of town had hallways between the rooms, which provided a sense of privacy. Most had indoor plumbing, furnaces, and telephones. Wives of businessmen and successful professionals could phone in their orders for groceries, which were delivered to the door. In some towns, there was even long-distance calling available. Beginning about 1905, each town heard its first automobile arrive. Many of the first cars were owned by physicians who found them useful for making house calls. Drug stores seemed to be on every corner, and people could buy newspapers, magazines, cosmetics, and soft drinks whenever they wanted. Both Coca-Cola from Atlanta and Pepsi from New Bern were available. Men often walked home in the middle of the day to have dinner, as the midday meal was still called. They might pick up an item in the downtown hardware store on their way. Women of more successful families almost never worked outside the home. They often had black maids who watched the younger children while they attended club meetings. There they read books together and discussed ways to bring more progress to their communities. Some clubs pushed the male town leaders to improve sanitation, start a public library, or build a park. One of the first organizations was the End of the Century Club in Greenville, founded by Sally Southall Cotton. Mrs. Cotton later helped many of the clubs throughout the state join together in the North Carolina Federation of Women's Clubs in 1902. In every town, churches grew rapidly and erected larger sanctuaries and Sunday school buildings. Often, five or more white churches would be on or right off Main Street, their brick towers rivaling in height the highest business buildings. Where country people in North Carolina had often waited for a minister to visit their neighborhood, townspeople could expect several services a week on Sunday and Wednesday nights, in addition to Sunday mornings. Most downtown churches had new organs and featured choirs led by women trained professionally in music. Even though townspeople enjoyed the benefits of new technology, they still imitated the country habits of their ancestors. All but the richest of women spent much of their day preparing meals from scratch, cooking on an iron cook stove heated by wood. Most middle-class families still kept cows, chickens, and even hogs because food was cheaper and fresher that way. After 1900, the variety of entertainment in towns increased. By 1910, movie theaters, all of which had segregated seating by law, were established in every sizable city, and the film being shown changed each week. Most towns had brass bands, which played in parades and gave concerts in the summer. Baseball was the principal sport. Teams of local amateurs gave way to minor league professionals after 1910. Jim Thorpe, who became a famous Olympic star, played for the Rocky Mount Railroaders in 1909. The Durham Bulls, made famous much later in the movie Bull Durham, began play in 1913. Some townspeople moved to fashionably designed neighborhoods at the edge of their communities. The first of these suburbs, where the houses were put in ordered lines and resembled each other in style, was Dilworth in Charlotte. More than 500 houses were built there soon after 1900. To get to work or shopping, most suburban dwellers took the streetcar. Some suburbs included country clubs, where the new sports of golf and tennis were played. the country club came to the town of Wilson in 1916. The confines of the Mill Village. Life in the Mill Village was far different from that of the suburbs. Although the houses were also in a straight line and the streets were often paved, the Mill Villages were more plain than prosperous, and they were to be found in just about every North Carolina town after 1900. Gastonia had 4 Mill Villages in 1900, more than a dozen 10 years later. Most cotton mill owners provided housing for their workers because most of the workers had come directly from the farm and could not afford to buy or build a house. Most mill houses were 3 or 4 rooms, with one room being the kitchen. None originally had running water, electricity, or indoor plumbing. Some remained without those services well into the 1900s. As late as the 1920s, only 1/3 had both electricity and running water. Those with toilets often had no bathtub. Well into the century, mill hands spent more than 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, working. They often went to their nearby homes for the midday meal. Because cash was often scarce for mill families, many kept charge accounts with high interest rates at the company store, which was run by the mill owner. For many North Carolinians who left the farm, the Mill Village was their home for life. Knox Parnell went to a Belmont mill and took a job on a warp machine, which twisted the cotton fiber into yarn. He later told his son that he adapted to this new way of life with a smile on his face and spring in his step. Parnell kept the same job for the next 57 years. He and wife Edith lived in the same house that whole time. The kitchen originally had only a cold water faucet, and there were no window screens. At one time, their 5 children slept in the same room. The children shared 1 tub full of water that was heated on the stove each Saturday night. Mill families kept up some of their country traditions. Most dug vegetable gardens in their backyards, and some kept hogs and cows. Families were active in churches set up in the mill villages, and children almost always went to school after the compulsory education law was passed in 1913. They took great pride in their community baseball teams, made up of young men who worked in the mill. Yet for many, mill village life was isolated. As one Gaston County resident remembered, the villages were a culture, almost a different society, unto themselves. Many families shopped, were schooled, and worshipped only in the mill village. Some did not like to go to town, for mill hands felt insulted when they were called lint heads, a nickname referring to the cotton dust that covered them at work. That led some downtown churches to establish chapels in the mill village for separate worship. In some cases, the minister would preach in the downtown church on Sunday mornings and in the chapel on Sunday evenings.